Now, what would be the odds that was happening again, that that wasn't a new report? Was that a new report or an old report? That's what I'm asking. Is it a new report or an old report? Is that a new report? Well, we don't know.
When a seasoned sports fan teams up with a millennial, opinions may vary, but the debates assuredly won't disappoint. Check your sources. It's New Report, Old Report.
Here's your hosts, John Lund and Al Renato.
Well, Al, another exciting week in athletics. Major League Baseball is coming at its players once again. The NBA playoffs heats up in its second round, and teams have made absolute fools of themselves in games that they should have won easily, and they did not. And that's unfortunately where we have to start. For the way that these teams came into the series, we talked about who would be favorites, who might not be able to play up to their potential. And whenever you think you have a storyline figured out, every team that you thought was going to be the team that wins the series completely reverses everything on its head. Just when you think you have an idea of where a series is going, the next game makes you look like a fool. We could start with the Philadelphia 76ers in the Atlanta Hawks, a series that started out with a little bit of an upset. We talked about the Hawks getting a game on the road, very impressive. The Sixers win two, and you think they're off to the races. Gentlemen sweep, here we go. You blink your eyes, and it's a 3-2 series. Because death, taxes, and Doc Rivers teams blowing playoff games. You can't make things up. And game five is the icing on the cake for that sentence. After game four was the icing on the cake for that sentence. A huge lead blown. Okay, maybe you didn't have it that game. To come back out in game five on your home floor, up by just about 30 at one point, going into the fourth up 16, everyone on the East Coast, rightly so, goes to bed and wakes up in the morning to the Hawks winning 109 to 106 and taking a 3-2 advantage in the series. I don't really have words for what we witnessed. For really what we witnessed in a two-day span, in less than 24 hours, the games that were decided by just stupid is unbelievable. And thankfully, we get to talk about it. Can you tell me what's going on with the 76ers? What has happened in that series? Why is it 3-2 Hawks?
It's Doc Riversitis. I mean, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. We saw it last year. They blew a 3-1 series lead. Probably the third time in Doc's career. This is a team that's vastly superior to the Hawks. It's a team that is bigger. It's a team that has the arguably a top two or three player in the league who has been dominant in this series, who dominated last night. And for some reason, at home, after blowing an 18-point lead on the road, in an all-important game four, they are guilty of what is, without a doubt, one of the two or three worst collapses in my lifetime of watching postseason basketball. Absolutely beyond belief. I was watching the TV, and I was dumbfounded. And Ben Simmons, 4-for-14 from foul. It's your point guard, 4-for-14 from the foul line. Joel Embiid doesn't score for the last 7 minutes of the game. Nobody else scores besides Seth Curry and Joel Embiid. Seth Curry had a great game, to his credit. Nobody else scored. Nobody else scored. Nobody else scored. It's unfathomable. You blew a 26-point lead in the most important game of the series at home against a team that you're clearly better than with a dominant big man, and you couldn't find a way to score for the entire second half of the fourth quarter. Didn't make a basket. Last 7 minutes. And to add insult to injury, down three, they get the ball to their big man, take too long, goes in the lane, gets fouled, and misses his first two free throws of the night. Down three with 11 seconds to go, game, set, match. It's over. It's over. Now, they should still probably win the series. Do I think they'll go to Atlanta and win? Yes. They're clearly the better team here. It's not even close. And I like the Hawks. They're young. They're feisty. Trae Young, he's a load to guard. They've got their Bogdanovich. I like John. I dig John Collins. I like the way he plays a lot. Plays hard. He's all over the glass. And last night, to Nate McMillan's credit, what did he do? Up a possession. He went to the mismatch. He went to Gallinari with a guard on him that he had 4 or 5 inches on, isolated, was patient, gave Gallinari the chance to give him a 2-possession lead, knocked down his 16-footer with the size advantage. Nate McMillan, remember, did not start the season with this team. Remember, Nate McMillan was unceremoniously let go by the boobs from the Indiana Pacers front office after he had signed an extension. I thought it was an absolute tragedy, a travesty. Couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it. And I couldn't believe the Pelicans didn't hire him. Instead, they hired the boob Stan Van Gundy, who was a first-class bum of epic proportions, shouldn't be in the coaching business at all, committed his abortion in New Orleans for the year. He's already gone. And they lost out on one of the best coaches in the league, and who simply went into Atlanta. And I understand they were banged up. They had some signings in the offseason, Gallinari, traded for Bogdanovich, and they were in really good shape personnel-wise. Signed Rondo, that didn't work out, but a lot of guys nicked up, didn't get their lineup back till the second half. But Nate McMillan came in and flipped the switch. They turned it around instantly. They didn't lose a game for a couple of weeks. Now, you can't just tell me, all of a sudden the players got healthy. Nate McMillan came in and they lose a game for 2 weeks. So this notion of another retread coach. Nate McMillan is a terrific coach. And Nate McMillan, if what I've heard is correct, is going to be a free agent. He does not have a contract after this year. So, I mean, if I'm Dallas, where Rick Carlisle just retired today, stepped down, and I'm not sure why, maybe there's only what's going on in the front office, Donnie Nelson being given the door, or if I'm Milwaukee and I lose this series, which after the other night, as I said to you, if it was the end of the series, Mike Budenholzer would have gotten on the plane. I'm going after Nate McMillan, plain and simple, who's one of the best coaches in the league and doing a great job in Atlanta and coaching the pants off of Doc Rivers. Plain and simple. Doc looked last night like he looked last year when you and I looked at each other when they were losing the 3-1 lead to Denver, and he's clapping his hands when they come back for a timeout down 15 with 3 minutes to go. Clapping your hands. Clapping your hands. Doc, let's get in the game. But back to the 76ers. They were lost. They were lost. And, when you're worried about your point guard going to the foul line, when he doesn't want the ball, when he's afraid to shoot a free throw down the stretch, that's a huge problem. Huge problem. And that's what they've got right now. Now, as I said, they should still win this series without a problem. I think they'll go into Atlanta. I think they'll get it done. And I think they'll wrap it up at home in game 7. But this series should be over. It should have been over last night. And I just don't understand what Doc Rivers is doing. I really don't. They're dominating, and they simply just go to sleep, and he does nothing to relight the fire. He can't get them back into the game. He's got talent. He's got experience. He's got horses. But what Philadelphia did last night was blasphemy. If I was a Sixer fan, I didn't get out of bed. Worse than the Bucks lost the night before, which was hideous, which was awful. Which, as I said, if it was the fourth game of the series and I'm done, Mike Budenholzer, don't even get on the plane. Don't even come home with us. You're fired. Because his failure to make any adjustment to what the Nets were doing with a James Harden who was severely damaged, who you barely had to guard. You didn't make him work on defense at all. And you never double-teamed Kevin Durant. Could you try it once or twice? Could you say to Giannis, how about you take a shot at him? You're the defensive player of the year, or were. Instead, he's guarding nobody. How about the double-team? How about get the ball out of his hands at the top? Make sure he doesn't touch it. Let somebody else give it a try. If Jeff Green scores 40, so be it. Who saved their bacon with, you know, 7 for 8 from 3 in the first half and 27 overall, making shot after shot? But then, still, after all that, you've got a tie game and you've got the ball down the stretch. And what does Giannis do with Harden on him? Does he turn into the post, take advantage of his size, go up with a little jump hook, kick it out to a wide-open guy off a double team? No. James Harden waves away the double team. Why? Because he pushes Giannis to the right side where he takes a fadeaway, where he gives away a 7-inch height advantage, takes himself away from the offensive glass, and takes a fadeaway. Then he misses 1 and 2 free throws, and then down 2, after finally Durant misses a shot, he gets a great pass from Middleton, and he fumbles the ball, and he drops the ball. Their big-time all-world guy getting it done, 48 minutes, your big-time MVP down the stretch after playing a really good game, as usual, disappears and doesn't do the right things. Doesn't do – basketball sometimes is about doing the right thing. It's easier to succeed if you do the right thing. And if you at least make the right choice and you fail, at least you're showing you know the game. And you know what you're supposed to do, and you put your team in the best position to win. You whirl into the post there, you create a double team, you get help. There's going to be somebody else open. If you get up and go up over everybody and you miss it, so be it. You're 6'11", you miss a little jump hook in the lane, that's okay by me. Or if you kick it out to a wide open guy and he misses, so be it. But what do you do with taking a fadeaway? Sometimes you watch Giannis and you just don't understand if he understands the concept of the game. And part of that is him and part of that's his coach. Because if I'm the coach there, I'm taking a timeout and I'm making sure he gets the ball in the post. And then if he shoots the ball, it's going to be in the post, in the post, in the painted area, not fading out of there, not a three, not go out, down, back out, all right, and take my Euro step and charge. None of that. All right. I'm making sure he shoots the ball in the box or get fouled doing it. If he gets fouled and he misses, he gets fouled and he misses. But at least with the lead, we're taking, you know, in an even game, we're taking a chance to get the lead. We want the lead. And my best chance for the lead is Giannis in the post or Middleton, not Giannis with a fadeaway. And it's just unfathomable the way these guys coach these games and the way some of these players play these games with their life on the line. With their life on the line, guys just disappear. They disappear. Ben Simmons wants to be all world. Where is he? I hate to say it, and I never want to put myself in this kind of position where guys say, I could run through that hole. I could hit that 70-mile-an-hour fastball. I could do better than 4 for 14 from the foul line. With a crowd screaming, all right, I could do better than 4 for 14 from the foul line. I have no doubt I could do better than 4 for 14 from the foul line. No doubt. Maybe with a blindfold on. That might be a slight exaggeration. But I know I can do better than 4 for 14 from the foul line. In front of 20,000 screaming fans throwing shit, okay? Standing up behind the board where I can see them through the glass and doing everything under the sun, all your dookie dopes, I can do better than 4 for 14 from the foul line.
Well, we joked when this happened to the Lakers when two of their starters didn't score in the postseason. And we said, has this ever happened before? There's no way that they've never scored. And indeed, it did not. This wasn't as bad. But the fact that only two people score for your Philadelphia 76ers and the other guy, Seth Curry, what happens in the 2021 NBA?
To his credit, he was brilliant.
He was great. He was absolutely fantastic. Had an incredible game. And when that happens with that guy, you're supposed to win that game. But you look at the box score and see what Joel Embiid did, another great game numbers-wise. But in the moments where you needed that production, they were nowhere to be found, capped out by the two missed free throws. The 76ers are the only team to blow an 18-point lead in back-to-back playoff games in the last 25 seasons. They had a win probability of 95.5 at one point in game two. It reached 99.7% late in the third quarter of game five. The probability to win, sorry, Atlanta fans, you'll have to just take the good with the bad here, was the same probability that the Atlanta Falcons had against the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl, who then went on to blow that game. Thankfully for Atlanta fans, it was the reverse this time. And the resume speaks for itself, unfortunately, for Doc. I know there are some asterisks with these, but these are the numbers that people have put together for what Doc Rivers has faced in the postseason. 2009, still with the big three. Celtics up 3-2 on Orlando. They lose the series. 2010, up 3-2 on our Lakers in the NBA Finals. They lose the series. Up 3-2 on Doc the Heat, Eastern Conference Finals, 2012. Lose the series. Clippers, up 3-2 on the Grizzlies, 2013. They lose the series. Game 7 was at home. 2014, they blow a 15-point lead in Game 5 versus OKC. They lose the series in 6. 2015, they blow a 3-1 lead to the Rockets. 2016, up 2-0 on the Blazers. They lose 4-2, four straight. Lose Game 7 at home to the Jazz, 2017. 2020, the blown 3-1 lead against the Nuggets in the bubble. 2021, to be determined. Now, there were some injuries in there to Blake Griffin, to Chris Paul with the Clippers. Kind of derailed things in the postseason. We get it. But this has unfortunately become a trend. And I'm not exactly sure what the answer is. Is Doc just too nice of a guy? I mean, when he speaks about world things, he's phenomenal. When he speaks about tragedies, successes,
he's a great person. Doc is the coach you want to go to and hear from in trying times.
No question.
You want to hear from Doc. You want to hear what Doc's got to say. You want to hear his view. You want to hear his emotion. You want to hear his heart. You want to hear his mind. But in tight playoff series and in tight games, Doc is the last place you want to go.
Clap for you, though. We saw that. He'll clap for you. I still agree with you as well that the Sixers should find a way to win this series still, but you're going to Atlanta in game 6, and that place is going to be wild. Before, during, and after the game, win or lose.
You know, win or lose, before, during, and after, Lou Williams is going to have a hand in something.
There's no question about that.
Or especially after. And Lou is back.
Lou is back.
Lou's knocking down threes. He's showing the swag before, during, and I'm sure after. Lou has been playing terrific. He's given them a lot of bounce and a lot of scoring off the bench. And right now, they are they're the young team that's just feeling good.
Let's take a quick break to pay the bills. He's Al Renato. I'm John Lund. We'll be right back with the new report, old report, here on Sports Radio America. We welcome you back. I'm John Lund. He's Al Renato, and this is the new report, old report. We had another series go 2-3-2. On paper, before the series started, it wouldn't be a surprise, but because of the way this season has gone, circumstances for the Los Angeles Clippers were less than ideal when Kawhi Leonard hurt his knee near the end of Game 4, said he was fine afterward, but then x-rays and further tests prove that he's hurt it, could be an ACL, he's not playing in Game 6, we already know that, and he wouldn't be playing in Game 5. Now, the theme on social media heading into the two Game 5s were, what are these superstars going to do for their respective teams? Can they carry the load and win their Game 5s? Kevin Durant was one. Playoff P, Pandemic P, or Paul George was the other for the Clippers. Everybody had their opinions if he would be able to lead the Clippers to victory. Well, he went out there and had one of the best games of his career. Played the basketball that folks should know he's capable of playing, quote-unquote carried the Clippers to a Game 5 win, 119-111 in Utah. The screaming fans wearing the same shirts. I don't know why that's the theme. If you go to a Jazz game, you get a shirt on the seat that you got to wear, but that's what they're up to now. An incredible performance, shut everybody up, 37 points, and now the Clippers have a 3-2 lead in a game where if you're the Jazz and you get afforded such an opportunity, you have to take advantage of it. Granted, Donovan Mitchell is banged up. He's got a bum ankle. Rudy Gobert, who is a three-time defensive player of the year, seen, as the kids say, because they went after him over and over and over again. Pick and rolls, role players going at him. Every time he had a step out of the paint, it looked like he was on roller skates trying to get out to defend the three-pointer. It was sad to watch. He had zero blocks and basically had zero impact on the defensive end. And the Clippers' game plan behind the pen and pad of Ty Lue was phenomenal. And they take game five and they take control of the series.
He can't guard anybody in this series. And this is where, you know, everybody, it's amazing. They rave about these players. Everybody's instant stupors. Stephen A, again, throwing it up against the wall. The Spike Lee of sports talk. Annoying, never shuts up, full of himself. Donovan Mitchell, pronounced as the greatest Jazz player of all time because he has a couple great playoff games. I mean, are you joking? Does Karl Malone ring a bell? Have we heard of John Stockton? Two Hall of Famers, went to consecutive finals, MVPs, dream teamers. This guy has a couple great playoff games. He's anointed as a super-duper star, all-time greatest. Oh, by the way, Pete Maravich, ring a bell. All, look, folks, look him up. For those, you know, the new report end. Google Pistol Pete Maravich. 6-for-19, Donovan, at home, game five. Most important game. I don't want to hear about the ankle. You played. Don't go up in the presser after the game and bitch about your ankle not being able to get where you wanted to go. 6-for-19. At home, huge game, most important game in the series. He went 6-for-19. Jerry West didn't complain about two broken thumbs after game seven. Be quiet. How about I stunk? We got to do better. Went on the road, come back for game seven. Next game, most important, got to win. I stunk tonight. I didn't get it done. Let my teammates down. Hey, Quinn Snyder, why don't you let your team take a few more threes? Why don't you not adjust to Tyronn Lue going small? Who is the awful tower going to guard? Who's he going to guard? Supposedly, according to the analytics, the greatest defensive year in the history of the sport. This just goes to show you what analytics mean. Zero when it comes to this bullshit about, you know, whatever kind of number they throw at you, how effective a defender is. He can't guard anybody out there. Unlike Anthony Davis, who can guard people 40 feet away, he can't guard anybody 40 feet away. He's not quick enough. He can't guard a guard with the ball 35 feet from the hoop. Can't do it. Blow right by him. Get stuck in screen and roll. He's great under the basket. He's great as a help defender in the box. Excellent rebounder. Shot block. But when he goes small, you got to make a move. You got to go small with him because you've got a guy who's not guarding anybody. He's playing a one-man zone. When he tries to guard somebody, he gets beat. Ludicrous. Ty Lue, coach in the pants, off of my fellow attorney, the genius, okay, Quinn Snyder. And now, shooting, you know, their usual 73 threes and nothing but blanks, we see just how badly they miss Mike Conley. Because all they do is shoot threes without him. That's all they do. Ball never goes in the paint. If the awful tower is going to be on the court, how about getting the ball to him in you in mismatches? You know, he can dunk over everybody if you penetrate and dish, if you drive and dish, but nobody drives and dishes. All they do is shoot threes. And now the one seed finds themselves in desperate straits going back to L.A. against a red-hot playoff P. And I remember in the beginning of the year, I said to the boys, you know, in the starting lineup, Frank Isola and Brian Scalabrine, I said, really, I'm never sure which Morris twin I've got and which one I don't. But it's not possible that one is four times better a player than the other, because the one in the Clippers is making $16 million a year and the one in the Lakers is making $4 million a year. I recant. I was incorrect. He is four times better. Okay, because their Morris, whichever one it is, and the Reggie Jackson, along with playoff P, are running circles around the Jazz. And they can't stop them. And if they're not knocking down their threes, they're done. They're a chuck and duck team. Dribble, 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 chuck. Not kick. Dribble, 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 chuck.
Well, also, too, talking about stats and box scores, I think the Jazz are shooting 40-plus percent from three in the series. But that's because they'll shoot 12 from 13 in one quarter, and then in the third quarter, they went 0 for 10. And that brought the Clippers right back into the game. So
what'd they go in the second half? 3 for 20 or something like that?
It was something like that.
3 for 24?
Pain is what it was. So when you look at the overall stat and say, wow, they're shooting a pretty good percentage, but not when it matters. And there's been a lot of not when it matters in this postseason so far. And even without Kawhi for game six and potentially in game seven, the Jazz are playing from behind here. No
pun
intended.
And look, the Clippers are at home. They're now on a little run at home where they've won their last, three games at home. They're playing better there. Paul George, to his credit, is playing terrific. And look, they really don't have a very good matchup for Paul George from the defensive perspective. Who is the real guy who's going to guard him for them? He's too big for Mitchell. You know, people think Mitchell is, 6'8", 6'7", 6'6". Mitchell is about 6'2", 6'3". Paul George is way too tall for him. And Paul George is best what he's doing now. He's not just settling for threes. Yeah, he's going to take five or six or seven threes. That's fine. But if you're going to take, 13, 14 other shots, 15 other shots, and they're going to be mid-range, and they're going to be layups, and they're going to be dunks because you're going to the basket, you're getting to the free throw line, five or six threes is fine. That's a good distribution. You look at the Jazz, they got three or four guys, 75% of their shots are threes.
Marcus Morris Sr. is the twin we're looking for, by the way, just to put a cap on that for the Clippers.
Not to be confused with old Tom Morris.
That's right. Old Tom Morris. One of the most fascinating stories that you'll ever hear in your life. If you ever want to Google old Tom Morris, find out what he did on the golf course. And when his son, young Tom Morris, teamed up with him when he was of age, they used to just go to country clubs and play doubles and wreck people all day long until young Tom Morris died from some disease at 24 years old, 33 years before the day old Tom Morris would actually die.
Don't confuse them with the Morris twins. This is not the Morris twins. This is father and son. Okay? Don't confuse them. What happened last night was really the cherry on the sundae for everything that happened the last 2 days. The Bucks giving away that game, the incredible performance by Durant, Scott Brooks gets let go, Stan Van Gundy gets fired. It looks like, as you mentioned earlier, that Kawhi Leonard, who's been fabulous in that series, may be done for this series and maybe the entire playoffs if that is a torn ACL. And lo and behold, when everything looked perfect for the Suns, Chris Paul is in protocol. Have you heard anything further on the Rick Carlisle circumstance of him stepping down? Did it have to do with, because supposedly Luka Doncic is not happy at all with Donnie Nelson being let go, stepping down, let go, I guess.
Yeah. It seemed like he was let go, and it seems like for Carlisle, Luka wasn't the biggest fan. From a report, he reportedly showed up Carlisle several times this season, such as making animated gestures on the court when he disagreed with the decision or yelling at Carlisle in front of assistant coaches and teammates. Now, the interesting thing for this, regardless of how their relationship is, Luka Doncic is no surprise to say that he's a top 10 player in the league. and he's going to sign the rookie deal to stay with the Mavericks to get as much money as possible. So for Rick to be in a situation where, okay, Donnie Nelson's gone, to say, I'm out too, something's got to be going on. Wouldn't you want to make sure you're on a team that has a player of that capability? Maybe if you're a coach, unless he knows he's going somewhere else, maybe he's shipping up to Boston, going back to the old
home ground. The next thing is there are now, with this one, seven openings. Portland, Indiana, Boston, Orlando, New Orleans, Dallas, the Wizards. I mean, if I'm Dallas, I'm sprinting after the franchise icon who led them to the one championship. How is Jason Kidd not a perfect fit for Luka? That move has Mark Cuban written all over. You know, a lot of musical coaching chairs open in the NBA. Who's going to get recycled? Who's going to be a fresh face? Very curious as we go down the stretch.
Let's take a quick break to pay the bills. He's Al Renato. I'm John Lunn. We'll be right back with the new report, old report, here on Sports Radio America. We welcome you back. I'm John Lunn. He's Al Renato, and this is the new report, old report.
Let's turn it to the stickiest situation in sports right now, the national pastime, where it looks like Chris Russo's good friend, the stumbling, fumbling, bumbling, lead boob, Commissioner Rob Manfred, has done it again. He's now decided, after he knew this was going on, for not months, but for years, but when it's gotten to the point where it's starting to ruin the game, instead of stopping the snowball as it started to roll down the hill, he waits until it becomes the avalanche and he tries to do something about it. And he tries to do something about it a third of the way through the season. So all the pitchers are pissed, at least the ones who are cheating, right? And we got one pitcher who says, I got hurt, and I got hurt because of this. I don't buy it. Not saying he's not being sincere, but I don't buy that. And something clearly has to be done, and it does have to be done now, plain and simple. Your thoughts?
It's a sticky situation. It's long been known that pitchers will try to doctor baseballs in whatever way they can to get an advantage. That's happened in baseball since its infancy for all sorts of different variations. Spitballs were once a thing. Back in your day, probably. Spitballs. When we were in high school, when I was in high school, you got a box of balls for each game if you were the home team. Your coach would throw them in the dirt, rub them up a little bit, try to get some sort of grip on them. And that was it. You went out to pitch. There was no rosin bag. We didn't know about sunscreen or pine tar because we're using metal bats. Why would you have pine tar? Or this stickum probably wasn't even in mainstream where you could purchase it at the time. If you got a bad baseball, you weren't throwing it off to the side because you only had about 20 baseballs to use. A foul ball is hit, the scrubs on the team are sent to go get it. We're not losing it in the woods. Get in there and try to find it. Unless it goes in the water or an animal steals it, we got to get the balls back. We only have a couple to go around. The worst thing you could do is have to go to the opposing coach and say, hey, coach, can we borrow some baseballs? We ran out. You're hitting them too good. We got a couple home runs out there, and it's not too good. So we didn't have any doctored balls when I played. I'm not sure if that changed when you played. But obviously, we're not major league players. This is something that's just part of the game. And I don't want to say that's an unfortunate thing, but you look to get the advantages the best way you can. This was something that was discussed years ago. I remember Michael Pineda during a Red Sox game, nice old blob of pine tar on his neck. The umpires came out, the hell are you doing? Got him out of the game. But then it kind of quieted down because pitchers were saying, hey, if we're using the rosin sunscreen concoction, we have a better grip on the ball. and we're not going to accidentally throw it 99 miles an hour at a batter's head. The batters in turn said, that's not a bad idea. I wouldn't want a baseball coming 99 at my head. Continue what you're doing. But as all things go in sports and in life, but specifically baseball, greed carried over and it became, what else can we do? What more abuse. Can we do?
Abuse.
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 We find this stick'em, which is used in the strength Olympic man competitions to make sure that the 1,000-pound boulders don't fall off your hands when you're trying to carry them around. That's the substance that they find out can have your spin rate go crazy. And one of the first teams that had this happen because of one of the pitchers was when Gerrit Cole was on Houston. He leaves Pittsburgh, goes to the Astros. All of a sudden, his spin rate is through the roof, and he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. What changed? What changed with a lot of these pitchers? Well, they were up to something different. Now, I don't condone doing that sort of thing, but why wouldn't you? When MLB turned the other cheek, of course you're going to see what else you can do. But for them to step in and just basically say, stop what you're doing cold turkey almost halfway through the season doesn't seem like the best way to solve this problem. And pitchers are talking about it. One in particular was Tyler Glasnow, Tampa Bay Rays flamethrower. Came out and said, a couple weeks ago, I stopped everything. Cold turkey. I was a rosin sunscreen guy. The next day I woke up after my start against the Nationals, I had pain in places in my body. I didn't know I had muscles because I had to grab the ball differently for my pitches. Next time he goes out, hurts his arm. He's either got to rehab and avoid Tommy John surgery, or he's going to have to get it.
Here's what I don't understand about that entire scenario. He says he normally holds the ball like an egg. You hold an egg incredibly gently so you don't break it. You're telling me you hold a baseball naturally like an egg and you can grip it to throw it 100 miles an hour? Bullshit. If you hold it like an egg, you got enough goop on your fingers so it's stuck to your fingers. But you can't hold a ball like an egg and throw it 100 miles an hour unless you got something helping you hold it. You don't have to squeeze the death out of it, the life out of it, but you got to put some squeeze on it. You got to hold the ball. What these guys want to do is they want to hold the ball with just their fingertips, but have enough juice on those fingertips so they can get the maximum amount of spin and action. It increases the velocity. It increases analytics, spin rate. This is all a byproduct of this analytics bullshit and spin rates and launch codes. Everybody's got to throw 100. Well, you know why everybody throw 100 now? Because the guys who would throw 93 and 94 and 95, all right, they were trying to control it. Because to control it, they had to tone it back from 100 to throw at 95. Well, now they feel, since they got the shit on their hands, they can control it better and they can throw it as hard as they want. As hard as they want. You're not supposed to throw the ball. Pitching is not throwing the ball as hard as you can every pitch. That's the right fielder trying to throw somebody out at third. That's Dave Parker throwing the ball 300 feet. When you're 60 feet, 6 inches, trying to throw it to a little spot, there's supposed to be control. You're supposed to be pitching, not throwing. When Sandy Koufax, folks, do the research. Sandy Koufax, greatest 6 years history of the sport. When Sandy Koufax came up with the Dodgers as a flamethrower and couldn't hit the broadside of a barn throwing 100 miles an hour, he was useless to them. He had no control. None. Finally, on a flight home, the backup catcher, Larry Sherry, Norm Sherry's brother, said to him, Sandy, you don't have to throw the ball as hard as you can. Take a little off. Instead of 100, throw it 97. Throw it 96. And that was the turning point for Sandy Koufax. And instead of the ball going to the backstop and Sandy Koufax walking a guy per inning, he became the greatest pitcher in the history of the game for 6 years. Until his arm fell off and he would have had, back then he had to retire. Now it would have been Tommy John surgery. Instead he had to retire at 30. In his prime. Pitching 350 innings a year. pitching 30 complete games. That's 30 complete games. That's 350. That's striking out 382 batters in 350 innings. Not walking anybody. Complete game after complete game. That's because he turned it back a notch. These guys don't want to turn it back a notch because it's all about velocity. It's all about the gun. It's all about travel teams. It's all about the talent on the road. It's all about the camps. It's all about perfect game. It's all about who's got the gun on this guy. It's all about who's got the gun on that guy. It's all about spin rate. Look at him. He's throwing 98 at 16 years old. Why? Because they're throwing the ball as hard as they can to get maximum velocity. And what's helping them throw it as hard as they can? Something that allows them to grip the ball where they have no fear about the fact they can't control it. If I can grip it better unnaturally, I can throw it harder. And the better I can grip it, the harder I can throw it with more control. So instead of taking something off to control it at 95, I'm throwing it 102. Instead of taking something off and dropping me to 91, I'm throwing 98. And I'm watching guys, this guy in the fucking Brewers, Burns, he's straight out, all of a sudden he's straight out 14 guys in 5 1/3. Are you fucking kidding me? I watch him pitch, his slider breaks a foot 3 inches before it gets to the plate. You tell me that's natural? Come on. It's horse shit. Even up the playing field. And if you got to do it now, I don't give a shit. Well, you know, I was going 16 to 55. Well, everybody goes 16 to 55. That's right. We're going to let you slide. We're going to let you slide, and we're going to let you slide, and we're going to lose it. But you were going 90 in a fucking 55. You're getting a ticket. You're going into your glove for goop. You're not just putting a little stuff on there to help dap your fingers and getting a better grip. You're loading up, and your rotation and your spin rate on that ball is unnatural. And it's doing unnatural things. And that's why guys can't hit it. That's why there's so many strikes. And that's in conjunction with this fucking moronic notion of launch angle and elevation. And, you know, don't worry about striking out. That contributes to it as well. You're not going to see batting averages rise dramatically. You're going to see spin rates drop. You're going to see more home runs. You're going to see a little more contact, but it's still guys start playing the game the right fucking way, the way it's supposed to be played, where you put the ball in play, where you make the defense play you instead of turning tail and go back to the dugout because it's okay to swing as hard as you can because a strikeout is just another out, which is moronic, stupid, it's dumb, it doesn't make fucking sense that a strikeout is just as good as a ground out or a pop fly when the defense has to do something or there may be runners in motion that you can advance. No, a strikeout's fine. That's fucking idiotic. That's stupid. It's dumb. On base percentage, no problem with it. What did you grow up with as a kid? What did they tell you in Little League? Walks as good as hit? What is that? That's on fucking base percentage. It's that new wave analytics. We've always known a walk's as good as a hit in a big spot. A base knock when you need a guy at base. A single or a walk. Need a guy on base, single on base percentage. We love on base percentage. Well, isn't singles on base percentage? Give me a guy with 320 and puts the ball in play. You can have the guy who's 210 with 30 bombs and 200 strikeouts. I don't want his fucking ass. I want the ball in play. I want motion. I want activity. I want guys that have to defend the entire field, not 4 feet in between first base and second base, where I'm going to put six guys. It's fucking ridiculous. They've turned the national pastime into a national nightmare between this analytics bullshit and loading up the ball. It's a joke. An absolute fucking joke. You don't like it? Stop doing it. It's bullshit. We all know you're loading up. Your spin rates have gone off the fucking chart. And we know why. Guys got buckets of baseballs with goop all over. These balls, folks, get rubbed down. Every game ball gets rubbed down with the Mississippi mud by the umpires before the game. You got the rosin. On the other side of the mound, put a little pad where there's some tacky stuff that you can damp your fingers on. That's your spot. Regulated, agreed upon by everybody. Put Tom Glavine, Pedro Martinez, John Smoltz, Greg Maddux, Randy Johnson, put them in a room, come up with something with some hitters. All right, that you feel doesn't create an unfair advantage, that is enough to get you a grip, a decent grip on the baseball. Not so you could hold it like a fucking egg and still throw it 100 miles an hour. You shouldn't be able to hold the ball like an egg and throw it 100 miles an hour. You should have to put a little pressure on the baseball. And how do we know, by the way, that guys working on getting increased spin numbers and increased spin rates, where they're putting more pressure on their arms by getting a better grip on the ball and putting more pressure on their arms, but trying to increase that spin rate because that's so important now? How do we know that's not what hurting their arms? I'm not a doctor. I don't fucking know. But all of a sudden, with all the increased spin rates, nobody can stay healthy. And this is before we had this issue. This is before, this is using it all. Everybody's getting Tommy John surgery. Every time you turn around, elbow, ulnar, shoulder. Maybe it's because of the spin rate. Maybe it's because of the fucking goop and the fact that you're trying to throw 102 instead of 94 from the time that you're 12 years old on the travel team, on the AAU team, going to perfect game. Get the gun on. Get the gun on. What's the spin rate? Get the gun on. What's the spin rate? Two times through the fucking batting order. What is that? Jacob deGrom is terrific. But you're going to compare what he's doing to Bob Gibson and his 1.12 ERA where he had 28 complete games? This guy never pitches less than six fucking innings. Tell Koufax, Gibson, and Seaver, give me six. They never give him a fucking run. Throw 102 for six innings. Try and do that for eight or nine. Once. He's got one complete game. He's a great pitcher. But don't compare the two. It's night and day. These guys went on to pitch nine innings. And they went through the batting order four times. And the same guys where you had 10 teams in the league got to see him over and over and over and over. And they were still great. These guys, six innings, that's enough. Get him out. Seven innings, get him out. Yeah, he's got an ERA of 0.8. Yeah, well, you want to know something? Let me see him go nine for once. Let me see what his ERA would be if he went out through some complete games. Can't do that. His arm might get hurt. These guys didn't hurt their arms. How come these guys all do? Maybe it's the shit they're putting on the ball that allows them to throw the ball with a grip that they shouldn't have, and they're throwing the ball 6-7 miles an hour faster than they should because they can't control it without the shit throwing it that hard. Bullshit. And it's ruining the game.
All I know is I wish I wore more sunscreen in high school. I had no idea what I was missing. Could have been spinning that 12-6 curveball. It would have been a 24-12. I agree with you that I think there should be a solution that's agreed upon among the parties that have to be involved in this. And it shouldn't be that hard. Get the right people in a room and figure it out. Instead of having the pitchers going from 0 to 100 and then having everything go from 100 back to 0. And if they're caught, which will be interesting come next week when the umpires are going to be tasked now of checking the gloves, checking the hats. It'll be like in Little League when you had to line up all your bats and the umpire came over and made sure you had the right grades and everything was up to par with the helmets. There were no cracks or crevices before you went over the ground.
And the analytic geeks with the slide rules are just as much at fault because all they talk about is this fucking spin rate. All at whose watch? The lead boom. The guy who knows what's going on does nothing about it. Guy's at the top of the game. Supposed to be the keeper of the game. Yeah, he works for the owners. What he's supposed to do is in the best interest of the game. Rarely, if ever, does he do it. Maybe a great litigator. Maybe a brilliant guy. Has no feel for the game. No ability to bring the parties together. No ability to be an arbiter. Just a guy who every time there's a big spot, he finds a way to fuck it up. He finds a way to do something else to ruin it. Last year, no problem with seven and doubleheaders. I ain't got no problem with this year. This three fucking batter rule, are you kidding me? Guy on second base in the 10th inning. You want to do it in the 12th, 13th inning so we don't go 18 innings? I understand. We're still trying to save arms. We're still recovering from COVID. Absolutely. I can't get three innings in real baseball. I got to get, as soon as you get to the 10th inning, I got to get college football overtime. And that phony routine. Dude, this is the fucking big leagues. This is the real world. Enough with the bullshit. Play the fucking game where it's supposed to be played. Enough of this phony shit. He's a shithead. And he's ruining my game. And I can't stand it. I can't stomach him. He's such a tool.
The final update. Bud's job is safe through six games. The Milwaukee Bucks take down the Brooklyn Nets 104-89.
Middleton, a huge game.
We had enough shock over Kevin Durant's performance, not just because it's not every day that you see a 49-point game, putting the team on his back. James Harden played, but he was a ghost, and it was Durant's show. We yelled and screamed through texts about what the Bucks should be doing, i.e. putting any able-bodied player on Kevin Durant. Please double-team him. Put someone else on Jeff Green and live with the end result. Tonight, Durant goes for 32. James Harden in the second half, again, a ghost. They don't really get any other production. Everyone in the starting lineup was a minus in your plus-minus stats, for all people interested in that. Durant and Harris, both minus 25. Harden was a minus 19. Sweet heavens. Middleton with 38. Giannis with 30. Holiday with 21. These are the Bucks that you'd want to see. And they still didn't shoot great from three. They've really only had one game this series where they shot lights out from three.
But got a ton of buckets where they should be living. Hubie Brown's favorite location. In the painted area. They live there. They killed it from there. And Middleton had a very economical game. He had 38, and he had a very, very spry 38. He didn't have a 38 that resulted, you know, from chucking and ducking. Not a lot of forced shots. And when the Nets made their run, it was Middleton who stepped up and knocked down the two quick buckets at the end of the fourth quarter to stretch the lead out a little bit. And then it was Middleton again in the fourth with Giannis and with Holiday to put the game away.
And that's what they need.
He's a really good player.
He is. He's got to be the second in command and come to play every night, because there were a couple games this series he wasn't there and they lost.
What I like about him is I see a very even keel. And, you know, they always talk about when you watch him play, you can't tell if you're up, down, up 10 or down 10. That's what I see from Middleton. I see a guy who plays a solid game on both ends of the floor. And at least when I'm watching him, it doesn't look to me like he's affected by too much. He keeps a very even head throughout the game. And that's going to be really important when they go back to Brooklyn for game seven, because they need him to have another, you know, he doesn't have to go for 38, but they need him to be 1A, one or 1A with Giannis. And they need him to, he's a great free throw shooter. That's the guy you want with the ball in his hands down the stretch. But he got the lead because he never misses a free throw. And a very good defender.
Next we speak, we'll be in the conference finals.
Your predictions.
That's right.
For the conference finals, as we're going to a game seven, a game six, and a game six with CP3 waiting in the wings whenever he gets out of his hibernation.
Give me the Clippers. Give me the Nets. And give me the Hawks to upset the Sixers. I hate all of those picks. I hope it's Utah. I guess I hope it's the Sixers. And I hope to God it's the Bucks. But you can't trust anybody in this postseason.
Suns and the Clippers. Two championshipless franchises. Hawks, Bucks. Two NBA championships between the four franchises.
We fixed baseball and we fixed the rest of the NBA postseason.
I'm sticking with the Bucks. I'm going down with the ship to win a game seven on the road. I can't believe the Sixers are going to blow this. I can't believe they're going to not win this series. So I'm going to say the Sixers, even though I'm rooting for the Hawks. I think the Clippers are going to turn the trick in game six. Clip joint, Suns next time we speak, and the battle of big men. Bucks, Sixers. I'm sure I'll be wrong on all fronts. And that's what really you should take to the bank, guys.
You know anything about our show, fade accordingly.
There's nobody worse than the old report. Folks, until next time, for my partner, the great John Tiny Lund, I am El Renato, a.k.a. Alpha White Plains, for the new report. This is the old report. Have a great sports weekend, everybody.
We'll be back 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Sports Radio America. You can listen at sportsradioamerica.com and interact with the show there as well, or find us on the TuneIn app by searching for Sports Radio America. You can also follow John Lund under the same handle on Twitter at London Bridge. Thanks again for listening.